Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome, welcome to Condensed Histories. Welcome, the podcast that takes pop culture and condensed histories. Welcome, reveals the real history. Condensed Histories, reveals the real history.
The real history.
The podcast that takes pop culture,
reveals the real history.
I'm your host, Jem Deducci. And this time round, Condensed Histories. We're talking about hip-hop. Rap, you know, the kind of songs like this. Condensed Histories.
Truthfully, it is absolutely terrible.
I've got absolutely no idea why you've had any encouragement whatsoever. It's about as bad as it can possibly get.
Now, a lot of people have described it as urban poetry, but let's remind ourselves for a moment with a little bit of proper poetry, the sort of poetry that you would have been forced to learn at school. I wandered lonely as a cloud that floats on high o'er vales and hills, when all at once I saw a crowd, a host of golden daffodils. Okay, fine, it's a poem. How does it change the world? Not a lot. Now, full disclosure, and my wife, I know if she ever listens to this particular episode, she'll be grinding her teeth, I am not a fan of poetry. Really don't get poetry that doesn't rhyme. That's just a very short book, ridiculously short book. I get that there can be fun limericks and so on and so forth, but as far as I can work out, poetry is just designed to catch the attention of teenage girls, and I admit that it can be effective, or I've heard that it can be effective, and well done for all those guys who can say all this gobbledygook with a straight face. Well done you. I guess we do need another generation. But it just doesn't speak to me. Certainly not like a good book, for example. So, why am I talking about poetry? Well, people in the early years of rap, hip-hop, as it became to be known. But then again, it's had so many different names. And so, in 2023... there was a 50 years of rap anniversary. And indeed, I believe in New York, there was even a history of hip-hop museum opened up. And it's an interesting conversation. And I think the really important thing, and the kind of songs that I'm going to be concentrating on, is the more socially conscious stuff. Because whereas you might have Will Smith rapping stuff like this...
We were on our way. She was looking very good, so was I, must say. Word. We hit McDonald's, pulled into the drive. We ordered two Big Macs and two large fries.
I'm not entirely sure that that's going to change the world, although they were smash hits at the time, and I have a lot of love for Will Smith, although I certainly won't be mentioning his wife's name. But as an example, back in 1973, there was a guy called DJ Kool Herc. And he had a track called Back to School Jam, and that is considered one of the first hip-hop tracks. But I've seen some really clever videos that have taken black musicians, jazz musicians from like the 20s and 30s, and they are definitely rapping. In other words, they're not singing, they're talking to a beat, which is, in essence, the beat isn't mentioned, but the beat is going on in your head, things like iambic pentameter, but there is a rhythm to a poem, or, as I said, with iambic pentameter, something like Shakespeare's prose. And so what some clever people online have done is taken these songs, which, because they have a backing of traditional jazz, things like trumpets and maybe a fiddle or piano, whatever, so it sounds very jazzy, but what they do is they take away the instruments and add a traditional 80s style hip-hop beat to it, and you just sit there and go, yeah, that's rap. That was rap nearly 100 years ago. So the point is, like any musical movement, things like Beethoven, he wasn't the first person to write classical music, in inverted commas. Indeed, from his perspective, he was breaking some of the rules of the norm. Same with Amadeus, same with Handel, etc. But it's the same thing now with this black music coming out of originally New York in the 1970s. But you know what? Nobody noticed, because we're talking about 1970s New York. And recently, I've been on a bit of a binge of movies set in the 70s and early 80s New York. Everybody knows things like Midnight Cowboy, admittedly that's late 60s. You've got things like Taxi Driver, probably the most famous one. But I've also seen The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, you know, the one with Walter Matthau in it. And it's a full disclosure, I was loving that film. And it's right in the 1970s. And it's very much of its time, in the sense that there is some stuff that's like pretty racist about some Japanese diplomats, although the punchline to it is they're smarter than the Americans around them. But I was really, really enjoying the movie until the last 10 minutes. I've never seen a movie drop the ball so hard in the last 10 minutes. And I get that it was of its time. So if you don't know, Taking a Pelham 1-2-3 is about hijacking a train, a metro train. So the big question from the police is, how do they think they're going to get away with this? I mean, you know, they can't fly it to Cuba, for example. So it is a really clever setup. And for the vast majority of the film, I'm sitting there thinking, this is as good as Dirty Harry. But then the last 10 minutes, partly down to 1970s technology, it's like, that's a little bit silly to the modern eye. But the very last moments, it's like, that's almost a joke rather than an ending of a movie. So please enjoy it. But the thing about Taxi Driver, Midnight Cowboy, Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, or indeed, and again, something I have to share with you, I watched a YouTube video. I am a huge Sylvester Stallone fan, but they were talking about some of his lesser known movies. And there's a 1981 film filmed in 1980. So, I mean, absolutely, it's the same kind of New York that we're talking about here generally, called Nighthawks. Now, in it, and this is the insane thing, you've got Rutger Hauer being the bad guy. This is filmed a year before Blade Runner, so he's absolutely in his prime, and I believe that it was his role in Nighthawks that got the attention of Ridley Scott, and that's why he got cast in Blade Runner. You've got Sylvester Stallone as the central star. He is wearing spectacles, glasses, and he's got a full beard. So we've got Stallone in his prime, almost unrecognizable. He looks more like Al Pacino in Serpico. Maybe that was a deliberate choice. And his partner is Billy Dee Williams, who, this film was filmed after the filming of Empire Strikes Back, but it was filmed before Empire Strikes Back came out. So by the time this movie came out, you got Lando Calrissian standing there with bearded Sylvester Stallone versus Blade Runner. It's like an entire alternate reality movie has slipped into our modern world. Basic setup: Rutger Hauer is an international terrorist. Apparently, he's loosely based on Carlos the Jackal, who carries out a terrorist campaign in New York. And apparently, the reason why it didn't do very well at the box office was it was seen as really unbelievable that there'd be terrorist attacks in New York. Yeah, so you could say that this movie is aged like fine wine. It's a really good thriller. Unlike the other one, Taking a Pelham 1-2-3, this one does not fumble the ending, although it is badly edited because apparently they wanted to cut down the violence, but you get the idea. You might think, oh, sorry, was I eating chips at that moment and thinking I missed a bit? No, they just cut a bit out. But it's really good, and the thing about the movie is it shows you what other things Stallone could do. It made me think of, like, maybe you should have, like, a period gem of watching almost like an alternative career as Stallone. So something like Fist, which is his movie about the unions in the 1930s, which was a huge flop. Nighthawks was a huge flop. And then you've got something like Copland. And all three of these are really well-acted, well-put-together movies. They didn't flop because they were bad, unlike Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, with genuine comedy by Stallone. What was he thinking? In the case of those three movies, you put them together and think, he's a really good actor, rather than he's the muscle-bound 80s action guy. But again, all these films, not the things like Fist or Copland, but all the other films I've been mentioning, they're all showing you the grimy, dirty, litter-ridden New York. And this wasn't put on. The weird thing was there was a change of mayor that led to allowing of filming of New York. And of course, in something like 1980, America is the most powerful country on planet Earth, and New York is one of its biggest cities. So you'd think that it'd be that shining city on the hill, and it's a rat-infested poverty trap. And yet this is all being preserved in dozens of movies. By all means, this is not the only films there. And in the background of all of this, sorry, went off on a tangent there, you've got areas like the Bronx, for example, predominantly black, very high unemployment, very high crime, and there's just not a lot of stuff that happens. So what you get are these block parties.
I don't know what you gonna do, but whatever you do, hit the block party tonight.
People can't afford to go to nightclubs, but everybody can afford to go over to Jerry's on a Saturday night, and everybody brings their favorite records with them, and they play them, and maybe they bring together a microphone and some speakers, and they just have a house party. And it costs almost nothing. You bring your cheap booze, which you got from a liquor store. It's a good night out for not a lot of money. And it's like you've made your own disco there. But except you know everybody. And you are allowed to wear trainers, sneakers, if you're American, in there, rather than the various dress codes, arbitrary dress codes at these various nightclubs. And so that's where it all started. These block parties were a necessity out of poverty, which led to sometimes people talking over the tracks that were being blasted out by these homebrew speaker systems. And they started off as really like, you've been told we've got to put the volume down because we've had complaints, or it could be something like, we need to move the cars, they're blocking the drive, whatever. So there are, you know, various different announcements, and people realize that that doesn't sound very good. So people would sort of like do it in time to the music, which led to people doing shout outs to people in the room and sort of like thanking people for the party. And then it just grew and grew from there. But the interesting thing is that this was going on for years, and the rest of the world and the rest of America didn't even notice. One of the big breakout hits of the hip-hop scene wouldn't come until 9 years later. There were other songs, believe me, there were loads of songs before this, but were they being picked up by everybody rather than just, and there literally used to be black charts in America. Just like in Britain, there used to be like the soul charts to recognize that there were slightly different genres of music. But we've got The Message by Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. And this was most people around the world's introduction to hip hop.
I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge.
Now, what's interesting about it is clearly it's funky. But if you listen to the lyrics, they are about urban decay. They are about the unemployment and crime that's going on in the area. It had something to say, and that's the fascinating thing for me. If you look at most of the pop music in 1982, you got things like The Police, and you got things like Blondie starting to get into the new romantic era. And don't get me wrong, I love all of this music, but none of it was trying to change the world or say how tough life was for the artists. And then, as a follow-up to this, to prove the point, we then got Melly Mel's White Lines.
Ticket to ride, White Line Highway. Tell all your friends they can go my way. Pay your toll, sell your soul. Pound for pound, cost more than gold.
Which is, again, about drugs and poverty. It's showing the frustration. It isn't like, I hate government, or, you know, the police are all bad guys to me, or anything like that. It's saying the life is bad. And again, this has been preserved almost in amber by all these different movies. This isn't a lie. But you've got these incredibly socially conscious songs, which are also something that you can dance to. Now, if you go back to, and I did a whole episode on political songs probably 2 years ago now, but the thing about political songs is, yeah, they might have something to say, but you can't really dance to. The idea is you're meant to just sit down and listen. I'm going to educate you on Vietnam or the environment. And again, these aren't necessarily bad messages to have, but the real trick that you got with the early rap songs is they can do both. You could have your cake and eat it too. And this reminds me, one of my boys made a comment. We watch lots of movies together, and obviously movies are heightened reality, but they've seen things like scenes in black Baptist churches in America, but also because they're in Britain, at some point they've had to go, for some reason, like RS schooling or whatever. They've been to something like an Anglican Protestant church, and they go, those black people seem to be having a lot more fun with their religion. And that's the thing, when you get things like funk and soul and hip-hop, these are coming from black communities where all these people, they may be super cool and be completely anti-disestablishmentarianism when they're grown up, but when they were 10 years old, they were dragged by their mamas to church, and they saw the musicality, the fact that you could have the very serious topic of faith with the incredibly fun topic of choruses and chanting and beautiful, beautifully sung hymns. So that, if you like, is almost in the DNA of hip-hop. Then the fascinating thing in the 1980s, there was all of these samples. And I know that the DJs, and they had these very basic sampling machines where they could only grab a few seconds of song, and they could only layer only 3 or 4 layers of track onto it, so people could build a rap track, and then literally they'd have to rap on it live because there was not enough memory left in the very basic recording machines. But because of that, it meant that they just had to grab a few bits of the song. And so they caught the most funky bits, the most catchy bits, which made these such distinctive sounds. Like It Takes Two. That's just an absolute classic song. I am hoping, by the way, as I'm going along with this, that Greg is throwing in a few bits of it. But that is so, so distinctive because they've taken a whoop and a cheer from a James Brown song and then just put it on loop. Nobody can actually ever sound like that. That would kill you trying to reproduce that. But a modern electronic computer can keep producing it, and therefore you get into something different. A type of sound that has never been heard before. And this, if you like, is the absolute key to it all. This was new. It was fresh. So, for example, talk about heavy metal. Well, heavy metal was an evolution from rock, and rock was an evolution from rock and roll, and rock and roll was an evolution from the blues, whereas something like hip-hop, there hadn't been anything like it prior to that. Yes, there was synthesized music, and yes, of course, they were taking bits from other songs, but they were repurposing them in a way the original artist could never have dreamed of. This led, of course, to an awful lot of lawsuits around this stuff, and it led to ideas of fair usage. But it revolutionized the music industry.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It revolutionized music, and it created a whole new genre, a type of genre that meant something to the kids, this new generation coming through. But like I say, with the likes of White Lines and the message, now we were getting young white people listening to it. And indeed, I got into hip-hop in the mid-1980s. You had this white teenage boy in West London on a different continent to where all this music was being produced. And at that stage, you know, nowadays people get het up about things like cultural appropriation and things like that. I guarantee there is no musical artist out there who doesn't want to not sell records. They want people to buy and enjoy and use their music and listen to their music and love it. Otherwise, what's the point of it? I didn't know that it was something almost not meant for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and it was so different to anything else that I was listening to. Of course, once we're into the 1980s, we then start getting actual swearing, cursing on the singles. And going back to It Takes Two, that's an example of one of these boast tracks that also came out relatively early and evolved into gangster rap, where we're getting less of the social commentary. And now it's like, I'm the greatest guy in the world, and all the chicks love me, blah, 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 which rapidly turns into, this is pretty misogynistic. So just to put into a little bit of context, by now, with It Takes Two by Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock, that came out in 1988, and it was everywhere for that entire year. But by 1988, we are now getting into the gangster rap, things like NWA, Ice-T, etc., loads of them. And this is where we start getting outright racism going on. But the interesting thing is, there are lots of movies about music acts. I did a whole episode talking about that and how they all fall into almost a standard pattern, and Greg did a brilliant job of piecing them all together. So, you know, Bohemian Rhapsody or Elton John, etc., you know, all the Elvis, blah, 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 blah. There are all these different acts. And therefore, to have one about hip-hop, that was something decidedly different with Straight Outta Compton. And Straight Outta Compton is the actual name of NWA's first album. There's a murder to keep you dancing with a crime record like Charles Manson. And it's a completely different type of music story, unlike Ray or Walk the Line about Johnny Cash. These guys, they were a group of young black men in LA. Now notice how I started off in New York, now we're in LA, and indeed by the late 1980s, we have this East Coast, West Coast competition. They got very different vibes. For a while, New York said, well, we own this. Nobody else is kind of allowed to do it. We came up with it. And LA went, no, we're going to do it ourselves. The sound on the West Coast, it was less edgy. It was more sort of dreamlike, a bit more relaxed and chilled. And yet the gangster rap, that, because of the gangs in LA, that started more or evolved faster in the West Coast than the East Coast. So when the East Coast picked up on it, they started doing it as well. But in the case of NWA, so gangster rap, whereas with something like White Lines or The Message, these are almost innocent bystanders looking at the crime and the degradation, etc. Whereas now we got people saying, I am the criminal and this is what my life's like. And it leads to all these braggadocio, sort of showing off, and again, lots of misogyny here. I'm not sort of like trying to dodge it, and lots of negative comments about the police, which I'm trying to keep my clean rating here, by the way. So there is a very famous NWA song, and I certainly can't tell you what NWA stands for, where they are very much against the police force, but I'm not going to give you the actual name of the track. And indeed, now that we're going into this area, it's much harder for Greg to find excerpts that kind of work, and we'll keep our clean rating. But I personally, well, NWA, I liked their stuff. I really liked, and indeed ended up buying Ice-T's book called The Ice Opinion. And it was really thoughtfully put together. The guy is smart. He had something to say. Yet he was also, again, doing these songs where it's like, this is how you organize a gang. One of his famous early songs is Six in the Morning. The reason why it's called that is that's when the police kick down your door to sort of raid your house. Just living in the city. No, it's a
cops want it, didn't have time to ask.
And at this point, we're getting into a lot of hysteria around it. The interesting thing about the 1980s is there were quite a lot of hysterias. There was the one about potential nuclear war. I think because this is during the Cold War and the fear of potentially the West and the Soviet Union going to nuclear war and wiping everybody out, I think that's a legitimate concern. We can mark that one under fair point. And whereas today people go, what were you worried about? It didn't happen. I would encourage you to have a look at what it was like in the 1980s. It could have happened. Both sides didn't know each other well enough. And it's a miracle we managed to get through that. But as I previously said, there was the scare around Dungeons and Dragons. There was the scare about playing certain rock music backwards, sending messages to the devil, receiving messages from the devil. This is genuinely something that time in court was argued over. And then there was the arguments around rap music, about it inciting violence, etc. And this is shown very well in the movie Straight Outta Compton. And this is what the general consensus amongst the musicians in that world. Whereas the music can undeniably become more extreme when you start off with things like The Message, for example, at the same time, really weird songs from the heavy metal corners weren't getting nearly as much heat. And it was the feeling that, well, hang on, it's because we black people record it, and then white kids sing it, and their mothers are appalled that they seem to be against the police. And I would say that's probably right. But what's interesting is, whereas all this hysteria that I've just mentioned was in America, nothing like that happened in the UK. Because there was just a very different vibe to society. People do confuse America is the same thing as the West. No, it isn't. And to be blunt, some languages are better to rap in than others. I've listened, for example, to some Ukrainian rap, which is about the Russia-Ukraine war. Again, very self-conscious, very conscious and political. But that language, because of its harder sounds, really works really well. Whereas you've got something like French, which is a beautiful, elegant, poetic language, doesn't work quite as well in rap. As one person said, and I do like this, the thing about the romantic languages, so French and Italian and Spanish, is no matter what the person's saying, it sounds like they're trying to make love to you. But the problem with German and Russian is no matter what they're saying, it sounds like they're trying to declare war on you. I think that absolutely works in the world of hip-hop. Hopefully you can tell I've got a lot of love here, but what I find interesting is movies from 2002 backwards, so the 90s, the 80s, so on and so forth. This is all pre-social media. But once we're into the middle of the 2000s, on into the teens, everybody's got social media. And so the world has changed irrevocably. And I genuinely think that in 100 years' time, we will have electronic archaeologists, people looking through emails and Facebook pages from 100 years ago, telling us about what the societal concerns were at the time. Something like Google Maps is incredibly useful and will only become more useful in the years to come. As you know, do you want to see what London looked like at the turn of the millennium? That will only become more interesting as time passes. The first time I thought about this is I looked into my old house. I was still in the old house at the time. And I noticed that they clearly had taken the photo when I had my old car, because they were two completely different colours. And it's like, huh, that's what the top of my old car used to look like, but I don't have it anymore. And obviously you now extrapolate that over 20 years and things have changed all over the place. So really fascinating, really interesting to me. But when we go back in time, it's interesting how things are remembered. So for example, the weird connection between hip hop is World War One. Now in Britain, World War One is largely explained to school children through the medium of poetry. Gas, gas, quick boys, an ecstasy of fumbling. And this has led to a very distorted interpretation of World War One. I talked about this a fair bit, but just to say, if you're trying to take your history from poetry, it probably isn't the same thing as actual documentary evidence. And the thing about these various poets and writers who died in the trenches, it's like, oh, and he didn't even get to see the end of the war. No, he didn't. But that kind of implies that the war was futile, or that we lost the war. And neither of those things were true. there's no doubt that the Allied forces absolutely categorically won World War One. So much so that all of, Germany did have an empire. It wasn't as big as the French and British empires, but they did have overseas colonies, and they were all taken away from Germany at the end of World War One and split between France and Britain, to the point where you literally had parts of Papua New Guinea, which were at that point German. They were given to the British, and the British took them as a colony and gave them to Australia to run as a colony. So now a British colony has its own colony. We can argue the debate about imperialism, but the point is, because Britain looks at it through poetry, we have a rather different interpretation to World War One than France does or America does. Because there aren't great French poems of World War One. They're not taught in school. They're taught with, as I would say is the accurate way, with actual footage from World War One and news clippings and posters. That is a better way of getting World War One out there. And again, when I've mentioned in the past things like Chaucer and Shakespeare, technically not poetry, but they are written in a certain lyrical way. And I do believe that when people are looking back at what was black society, African-American society like in the 1980s, again, a bit like something like World War One, it'll be distorted. Not everybody was a gangbanger wearing blue. You know what I mean, homies? That's not a fair representation. But talking about the urban decay rather than just how awesome America was, you'll get a very different experience. It's another layer of information and consideration. And the fact is, these albums sold by the millions. What's interesting nowadays is there were previously some attempts at white rappers, the most notorious being Vanilla Ice with Ice Ice Baby. Where again, he took a hook. The hook was taken from a Queen song, and it was a monster hit. And he even managed to get a song into Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, so I believe it's called Turtle Power. Vanilla is filled with a new jack groove, gonna rock and roll the place with the power of the Ninja Turtle bass. For a while, for a year or two, Vanilla Ice was big, but he was an idiot and he wasn't particularly talented. And they had to wait another 10 years or so till you get Eminem, Marshall Mathers, and you realize that he's an amazing lyricist and he's great at what he does. And again, he elevates it. He talks about domestic abuse and mental health issues. Sick is the mind of the kid that's behind. All this commotion, emotions run deep as oceans exploding. Tempers flaring from parents, it's blowing them off and keep going now. He even did in one of his early songs about, you know, you got people talking about guns and girls and you're talking about Vicodin. And it's like, it's just not the same thing. There's a sense of humor to his, which a lot of the times there isn't in some of the other stuff. And I know I've told this before, Dr. Dre, one of the people behind NWA, becomes the super producer. He's the first hip-hop artist to become a billionaire because he creates beats. He ends up championing Eminem and was astonished at how black people were being racist to this white guy, because you're taking our music, cultural appropriation. But his argument, but he's good, he's talented, and he's also genuine. He's not just coming in from his penthouse. He is white trash, just like black trash. He comes from a broken home and all kinds of stuff, and so he's keeping it real. What I find fascinating is, whereas there have been a lot of people shouting against over the years hip-hop, and there is a conversation to be said about some of things like the misogyny and glamorizing some of the violence, but there are also valid points as well. And nowadays, we're 50 years on, it's become as mainstream as the likes of Taylor Swift or listening to the greatest hits of Queen. Almost everybody has their own version of this is the kind of hip-hop acts that I like. Indeed, in the late 1980s, early 1990s, particularly in Britain, you couldn't get a pop song without it stopping in the middle of it for one verse of rap and then going back into a song. Perhaps one of the weirdest examples is the football theme World in Motion, done by the Lightning Seeds, who are definitely a band, a kind of indie-style band. And then you got John Barnes, who is a black British footballer, doing a rap in the middle of it. You got to hold and give, but do it at the right time. You can be slow or fast, but you must get to the line. They'll always hit you and hurt you. Defend and attack. which proves that not all black men are born to be rappers, but we all loved it anyway. And I love you, John Barnes. And it's one of the two great England football songs, that and Three Lions. Again, I've got no idea how much of this music has been put into this one, but I would say that hip-hop has been the most important musical movement of the last 50 years. And unlike pop music, which will always be more popular, that's why it's called pop music, it does have a lot of things to say. There is some really interesting stuff on it. And undoubtedly, cultural historians, art historians, maybe even some kind of electronic archaeologist will be picking through these tracks for generations to come, which makes them so important in our understanding of the 20th century or going on into the 21st century. But of course, I don't want to not give it credit where credit's due, because of course, this is where we are now. It can only evolve further. And like I say, nowadays, it's everywhere. It's not controversial. There may be acts that you like or dislike, and there are new acts coming through all the time, and then there's the arguments as, are they as good as the old acts? The violence seems to, thankfully, have evaporated. I mentioned the East Coast-West Coast argument, and this sadly led to genuine deaths. Biggie Smalls and Tupac Shakur, gone too soon. But I'm not going to go too far into that, because I don't want anybody to shout at me for cultural appropriation, okay? Please, please, be nice to me. But this is coming from a genuine love from my perspective. I liked Derek B, which was a British attempt in the 1980s for gangster rap. Didn't really catch on because, of course, there isn't that kind of gangland violence in terms of guns and things like that that there was in America. But particularly his first album I played, that was the very first album I paid for. That's how big it was for me. Shout out to Derek B. Who knows what happened to him? I do remember the profound disappointment of hearing his second album. Hey ho. Hope you enjoyed this one. As always, please click subscribe. Please, if you could share this on your socials. Every week I do shout outs on social media. I really would appreciate it if you could spread the love. Tell another human being about us and give us a review if you're on whatever podcasting app you're listening to. And as always, another episode coming soon.